Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where we have now somehow made it to August, and Lakers fans wishing for the front office to make a single new non-rookie offseason move have yet to still have their simple wish granted. But could it be Jeremy granted soon?
Hey.
We'll see. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, it is August. Summer is almost over. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Rui Hachimura are all showing out and balling for Team USA and Team Japan, respectively, so that kind of helps stem the tide. AD finally started for Team USA today, although he rolled his ankle a bit, but finished strong, thank God. So yeah, we've got Olympics basketball going on, a welcome distraction, I'm sure, because the Lakers still haven't made a consolidation trade to free up a roster spot. They haven't salary dumped one of their vet min players, and they haven't made any new signing outside of re-signing LeBron James, re-signing Max Christie, and signing their rookies. And meanwhile, the best remaining free agent guards on the market in Gary Trent Jr., Spencer Dinwiddie, and Tyus Jones have all found new homes, and they've done so for the veteran minimum. So add them to our long ongoing list of guys that the Lakers have missed out on, from Klay Thompson to DeMar DeRozan to Sasha Vezenkov. God damn it, Vezenkov. The Lakers can't even compete with Olympiakos. But seriously, Tommy, how have you taken the Gary Trent Jr., Spencer Dinwiddie, Tyus Jones non-signings as a Lakers fan?
So first of all, I just want to apologize for any background noise. I'm driving. Unlike Rob, I went to work today, so I have to drive home. You know, I think you and I have discussed this offline. It hurts in the sense that, like, those are names that all obviously could help any team, right? And the price that they were each acquired for is, like, well below market, I would say. So it stings, I think, superficially, right? But the reality with our team is that, you know, putting aside everyone's fantastical, like, hypothetical trade ideas, we have D'Angelo Russell, we have Austin Reeves, we have Max Christie, who we just signed. Those are three guys who we're committed to with a fairly, like, substantial financial commitment. I'm ignoring Gabe Vincent, who is also, like, you know, we were committed to for 2 years, maybe not long-term, but, like, he's, like, you know, a guy that we're paying and expecting to play. And then we just spent a first-round pick on a guard. So we're pretty loaded at the guard position. It's hard to imagine, you know, barring a completely roster-destroying trade, how we would find minutes for Gary Trent, Tyus Jones, and you know, these other guards who have kind of come off the market, other than, like, trading the guards that we have. And, you know, I don't know. It stings a little bit superficially, I'd say, but I think what would sting more is if, you know, guys, you know, who are clear upgrades over your Christian Woods and your Cam Reddishes start to fly off the board, and then you start to feel like, okay, those are minimum guys that maybe could have been easy to dump somewhere else, and or relatively easy to dump somewhere else, and then you start to get into, you know, those sorts of thoughts. But based on, you know, the fact that it's been all guards, I don't know. It sucks, obviously, but it's hard to say how much that impacts us.
Well, on top of it, these are all guards who were looking very specifically for a substantial role, right? It's one thing if, okay, I'll say this. The one guy out of this group that stings the most is losing Spencer Dinwiddie, because he legitimately, like, we know for a fact he wanted to be a Laker, right? These other guys, we're actually not sure if they wanted to come to the team in the first place, you know? Spencer Dinwiddie was actually waiting to see if the Lakers could finagle something in their roster. And by the way, I just want to point out, the Lakers can sign anybody right now. You know, they can sign above 15 players. They just have to get rid of their excess fat by the time training camp starts. So having, like, Cam Reddish, Jackson Hayes, Christian Wood on the roster right now is not impeding them from signing a veteran minimum player. You can have up to 20 players during this period of the offseason. So that's not even the reason why we couldn't get any of these guys. Spencer Dinwiddie hurts because we know that he was willing to take a veteran minimum contract to be on the team. I'll say that's the one, like, misfire that kind of hurts, because I feel like Spencer Dinwiddie was a really good fit with us last season, and he was a really good soldier who played his role. Whatever he was asked to do, he did it without complaining, and that was our biggest concern with Spencer Dinwiddie. Would he be able to scale down, you know? And I think last year we saw that Spencer Dinwiddie just enjoyed being a Laker. He was a easy locker room fit on and off the court. And so losing him sucks. But then, to your point, when you bring Gabe Vincent into the equation, we're assuming that he's going to be healthy to start the season. And if he is, he's pretty much going to soak up all of Spencer Dinwiddie's minutes, right? And the problem that occurred in the playoffs is when both of them were relatively healthy, we were kind of half-assing the backup point guard spot, and neither of them could gain a rhythm for themselves, right? So, like, Spencer Dinwiddie was playing 10 minutes after getting the bulk of the backup minutes before Gabe Vincent returned, and then Gabe Vincent was only playing, like, 10 to 12 minutes as well. So at some point, something was going to have to give. Again, it sucks to lose Spencer Dinwiddie, but yeah, knowing that we're going to have Gabe Vincent assume most of those minutes, and probably some of those minutes are also going to go to Max Christie or Dalton Connect, it kind of makes sense that we didn't move heaven and earth to, you know, retain Spencer Dinwiddie. And by heaven and earth, I'm talking about, like, dropping a second, of which the Lakers currently only have 4 seconds. I know they can easily get seconds here and there, but again, I think you've said this phrase before, but the Lakers are working under a spectrum of replaceability with a lot of these players. And the last thing I'll say again is that the Lakers can sign another veteran minimum player without having to make the moves to cut a Cam Reddish, Christian Wood, Jackson Hayes. They just have to figure all this stuff out by training camp. Now, with that said, here I'm just quickly going to go through the remaining free agents, Tommy. It's slim pickings at this point, but let me know if you're interested in any one of these guys or who kind of piques your interest. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, in terms of talent, here's, like, the top remaining free agents. We've got Gordon Hayward, Markelle Fultz, Landry Shamet, and Dennis Smith Jr. I guess you can add Lonnie Walker here too. So out of those five players, in terms of talent, are you interested in any one of those guys? Gordon Hayward, Landry Shamet, Markelle Fultz, Dennis Smith Jr., former Laker Lonnie Walker.
The only one I'm mildly interested in is Shamet. I mean, look, I think like Dennis Smith Jr., I actually feel like is underrated, but he's another point guard. And I'm like, you know, answering these questions based on the current construction of the roster. Landry Shamet is a good perimeter defender. If he's willing to compete for fifth guard minutes with, you know, Dalton Connect, I mean, personally, I would prefer to have a veteran guard at that spot instead of, you know, a Connect, but I don't know if Shamet would take that role, but he's the one guy who sort of piqued my interest on that list.
Yeah, and Landry Shamet is sort of like a easy plug-and-play shooter in J.J. Redick's system, and I believe they played with each other on the 76ers as well. And yeah, you know, I was surprised when looking at Landry Shamet's tape at how solid he was defending the perimeter. I mean, he's not like a lockdown defender by any means, but in terms of you kind of get that I wouldn't say perfect blend, but you get a blend of competent defense, but also stellar three-point shooting, right? I think Landry Shamet's like a career 38, 39% three-point shooter. So he would be an easy plug-and-play fit on a J.J. Redick motion offense, sort of shoot three-point shooting heavy system. I also wouldn't mind Gordon Hayward if Gordon Hayward is willing to take a lesser role, because I know he was kind of peeved at his diminished role with Oklahoma City Thunder last season. So I'm not sure if he's in the sort of space to finally just be a break glass in case of emergency type player. But people are talking about, you know, we lost Torian Prince. Gordon Hayward would be like a nice upgrade over Torian Prince if we could have him as a, you know, 9th, 10th, 11th guy. But again, I don't think he's ready to be that sort of break glass in case of emergency, end of the bench type player. Although I think he may, you know, get pretty decent minutes to start. But yeah, Gordon Hayward, Landry Shamet would also be my picks. Lonnie Walker is interesting. Everybody likes to give Lonnie Walker this cult hero status because of his Golden State Warriors game. Was it game three? I think it was game four.
Yeah, game four, because it was an L.
Yeah. So everybody loves Lonnie Walker. But again, it's kind of to your point, we're still dealing with too many guards. And until the dust settles on what we actually do with if we trade D'Angelo Russell or trade Gabe Vincent, right now it doesn't make much sense to bring in any of these guys. Now, with regards to the bigs left on the market, Tommy, it's even worse. Precious Achiuwa just re-signed with the Knicks for like $8 million. So really the only two guys that have piqued my interest left are Omer Yurtseven. He's still two-way eligible. He played for the Jazz last year and recently waived Bruno Fernando out of the Atlanta Hawks. So Bruno Fernando actually had a really solid final 2 months with the Hawks last season. He averaged like 8 points, 5.5 rebounds. He's sort of this like burly 6'10 with a 7'4" wingspan, athletic big who's sort of mobile. Kind of gives you like Tariq Black-ish vibes, but he also measures out defensively pretty similarly to like De'Ron Sharpe, who's a popular name that Lakers fans are gravitating towards, or even like a lesser version of Isaiah Stewart. Like he blocks shots, he has a good motor. Would you be interested in any of those two guys if the Lakers make a consolidation trade for one of their other veteran minimum players like Cam Reddish?
Yurtseven is sort of interesting to me as just like a big body, but it depends on, you know, how we get there, right? Like the question, right, with the roster as currently constructed is it worth trading Christian Wood in a second round pick for Omer Yurtseven? And I don't know that it is. So like in that context, no, if the spot was available and we needed a big, I'm kind of interested in Yurtseven, but not like, you know, I also, like, if your options are Yurtseven or nothing, or like keeping the spot open, there's a reasonable, I think, argument to keep the spot open and see if anybody else gets away.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Yurtseven, though, is he's still two-way eligible. And if he's willing to take on that contract, dude, shift someone out and give him the two-way, you know, just for backup big emergency cases. Last quick question on free agency. Let's talk about familiar faces. I already mentioned Lonnie Walker, but would you have any interest, again, once the dust settles, on these former Lakers? Troy Brown, Wenyen Gabriel, Stanley Johnson, and Talen Horton-Tucker.
I would have some interest in Troy Brown. I think he sort of like is who he is on both ends at this point. But he's a solid player and he has decent enough size. And I think that that's what, you know, consolidation trade or not, what our roster is kind of lacking right now is 6'7"-ish guys or even 6'6" guys with length who can sort of size up and play three. Guys who have the size to contend with, you know, size or length to contend with a little more size of the three, but are still somewhat quick. You know, we have LeBron, we have Rui. I thought Taurean Prince helped a little bit in that respect last year. So losing him for nothing was pretty bad, but, or pretty tough, I should say. But, you know, that Troy Brown on that list, he's sort of interesting to me for that reason.
Yeah, THT is kind of funny and interesting, but I feel like we would just be doing another sort of Cam Reddish bipolar flyer. And I think Troy Brown is sort of the lower ceiling but higher floor version of what we tried to do with Cam Reddish this season. We may never get like a November like we got with Cam Reddish from Troy Brown, but we may get more months of just steady play, pretty much like what we got from Troy Brown two seasons ago. So I wouldn't mind a Troy Brown reunion as well. Before we take it to break, so I forgot to outline this episode for the listeners, but we are mainly going to talk about, after we've done this free agency talk, we're going to talk about the Jeremy Grant trade, who's going in, who's going out, and whether or not we would actually trade two firsts for Jeremy Grant, whether we trade one first. So we'll talk about that after the break. But before we get to the break, I just want to do a level set really quickly on the first round picks the Lakers do have. So a lot of fans, and we've done this in the past too, Tommy, but a lot of Lakers fans like to point to the Dallas Mavericks set of trade deadline moves as sort of like a pretty perfect blueprint for marginal deals that can move the needle for a team, and why trading first for a short-term gain like that can be worth it. And I think you and I both agree. And I agree to an extent.
Yeah.
Because I think what people have to remember, though, is that the first-round picks that the Mavericks traded at the deadline are not the same type of first-round picks that the Lakers currently have to trade. So just to recap, Dallas traded OKC's 2024 first for Daniel Gafford. That ended up being the 24th pick in this draft, which the Wizards used to draft Kyshawn George. And I like Kyshawn George, but he's not a potential top five pick in the 2029 NBA draft when LeBron James is gone, you know? And then for PJ Washington, the Mavericks traded their 2027 first-round pick, top two protected. Okay, now this pick is a little bit more of a premier pick, right? It's like 3 years down the line. It's only top two protected. But it's still not the same level of pick as the 2029 first. It's not even the same level of pick as the 2027 first that we traded to the Utah Jazz, because Luka Doncic is still only going to be 28 years old and in his prime in 2027, you know? Whereas if we traded the 2029 first, LeBron will almost assuredly, I feel like, will have retired, and AD may also be on his way out. So where do you personally stand on the value of this 2029 and 2030 first picks? Because these firsts are enough of the way out in the future that I feel like you could, I feel like we're almost talking about a KG Pierce Brooklyn Boston trade for pick swaps and first type of potential seismic trade if LA were to move one or both of them. And so they have to be a little bit more judicious about how they deal those out, you know, while at the same time understanding that we cannot waste LeBron James and Anthony Davis's prime right now. But yeah, where do you stand on just how you value these picks? Because I feel like we're entering into uncharted territory, because these are literally the best first round picks we've ever had in the LeBron James AD era, simply because these picks are going to happen with both of them not on the team potentially.
Yeah. And to your point on that Dallas pick, especially the first one that you mentioned, like that was a pretty known quantity. I mean, in February, OKC was in the top three in the West, and it was pretty clear that where that pick was, you know, kind of going to, the rough range that pick was going to land in. 2029 and 2031, it's like, I mean, it's completely unknown. Maybe we'll have Jason Tatum. Maybe LeBron will still be playing. You know, there's all kinds of, I mean, it's so far in the future, right? And so I think to your point, these are extremely valuable picks. It's not the same as trading a pick that's going to be used in 4 months based off records that like are pretty well established now. I think, like you said, even that second one, yeah, they got a protection on it, which is good. But Luka is still probably going to be on the team. He's certainly going to be on the league. Like you said, certainly going to be in his prime. And so that's not the same as post-LeBron, post-AD, and like what do the Lakers do? Because, you know, you can say like, well, that's going to be far enough post-LeBron where they, you know, may have rebuilt. You know, I feel like anyone making that argument probably missed like 2013 to 2019. Who knows how long the rebuild is going to take? And, you know, honestly, we were saved out of our last rebuild by LeBron James wanting, and his, like, we should all just be thanking Savannah James basically for our rebuild, because the only reason LeBron came here to a team of, you know, young lottery picks was because his family wanted to be in LA. So, you know, I think it is very different, and I think our future picks should have way higher value than those Mavs picks, and I think they do based on, you know, reports around the league.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so, I mean, I can look back even on a few episodes that we recorded right after the season ended and during draft day, Tommy, where I don't even think we had, like, clarity ourselves on how valuable these picks were, because we were like, yeah, 2029 first, just stick it with Gabe Vincent and let's get DFS back as long as there's a protection. And now that the dust has settled and now that I've gained a little bit better clarity, I'm like, wow, that is super insane. I'm so glad that the Lakers and Rob didn't do anything like that, because I don't think it's just dawned on people yet just how valuable these picks are. I know there's like an insatiable hunger to get something and anything done. But the more you understand how valuable these picks are, the more you realize that. And then on top of it, Tommy, we don't have, we're attaching these picks to actual rotation players with value. And so it makes it even more complicated. It's not like we missed the boat on having like bloated, unnecessary, you know, filler with like Mo Bamba and Malik Beasley. We were able to pull off the Russell Westbrook trade because Russell Westbrook didn't mean anything to us. But we are facing a more complicated issue coming into this season, where probably the closest player in contract you can get to an unnecessary filler sort of salary balance is probably Gabe Vincent, right? And Gabe Vincent still kind of has value. So you attach one of our most valuable first round picks to him, and I don't know if Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, cuts it, you know, or moves the needle. Anyways, let's take it to break. When we return, let's get into this Jeremy Grant debate and talk.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair. But for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
American Giant makes great clothing. T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
All right, so we are back. Jeremy Grant. So I think, I forget which podcast episode it was, Tommy, but I think there was one podcast episode where you and I were maybe potentially okay with the Lakers giving up both picks as long as like one of them was protected or maybe a first and a pick swap for Jeremy Grant. Where do you sort of stand now with regards to the salary ballast that's going to have to go out is going to have to be some combination of Rui Hachimura and Gabe Vincent, maybe Jared Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent. But the structure of a deal that everybody's currently talking about revolves around Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, and both first for Jeremy Grant. Now, let's just make it clear. Are you willing to do both first for Jeremy Grant and Rui Hachimura?
No.
Okay, great. Now that we got that out of the way, let's move on to the next tier. Because this, I've gone on a bit of a journey here, Tommy, with regards to how I felt about Jeremy Grant. So let's talk about whether we would trade Rui Hachimura and one first. Let's say the 2029 first for Grant. Because my opinions and thoughts on this have slowly but surely shifted, and as I mentioned, it has been a little bit of a personal journey for me to get here. During the first week of free agency, when we were all antsy, I was in the camp of, and I think you were in the camp too, we were on record as saying so, as being so, and saying so. I was in the camp of, yo, let's find a way to just get Jeremy Grant. He's like a fusion of Vando and Rui. Yeah, he's making $30+ million the next 4 years, but the cap is rising. It's fine. If we can get him for Rui and one first, it's a no-brainer. At the time, I quickly glanced at his stats with Portland. I was like, 20 points, 40% shooter on 2 3-pointers made a game. Fantastic. He's still that dude. Let's do it for one first. But then recently, I did a more personal deep dive into Jeremy Grant's last few years, and I have no idea how it escaped me that he only averaged 3.5 rebounds last season and that career-wise, he's only a 5-rebound-per-game guy. But that was quite a shocking revelation to understand that Rui Hachimura may actually be a better rebounder than Jeremy Grant. And after actually watching some of his tape from last season, you know, I saw him chucking a bunch of bad contested mid-range jump shots. More importantly, like, it dawned on me that Jeremy Grant, I don't know why it only dawned on me now, but I think everybody is just remembering Jeremy Grant from the time that we played the Nuggets in the bubble.
Yeah, I was just about to say that.
When he was guarding LeBron James and we're like, oh, we're going to get that Jeremy Grant. But it re-dawned on me, Tommy, that Jeremy Grant is a power forward and he guards the same types of players that Rui Hachimura guards. He also struggles with the same sorts of things that Rui's struggled with over the last 2 years. He struggles with backdoor cuts, staying engaged team defense-wise. He struggles with navigating through screens. He doesn't have great foot speed against faster players. He's like a stronger, bulkier dude like Rui Hachimura. Rui's actually stronger than Jeremy Grant. And while Jeremy Grant is longer than Rui Hachimura, and while overall he's a better defensively aware player, he's pretty much Rui Hachimura with more experience, a larger bloated contract, and if he's engaged, slightly better defense. So all that to say, Jeremy Grant is not this slithery 3-and-D wing defender in the likes of Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby that people think he is, or that I once thought he was. And again, he's actually more similar to Rui. On top of that, Tommy, it also dawned on me that Rui Hachimura is not a terrible player. And because of the stink from his first round series against Denver last season, you know, I had kind of gotten into the mindset of just sort of willy-nilly throwing Rui Hachimura into any trade deal that would give us a defensive upgrade over him. If you remember, during one of our trade hypothetical episodes, I actually proposed trading Rui, JHS, and the number 17th pick for Bruce Brown. And you had to knock some sense into me and tell me that we shouldn't have to give up any type of first in that deal because a 26-year-old Rui with 2 years left on his deal is still an attractive asset. And so following that same sort of mental progression, that's kind of how I've gotten to this point of better clarity where I'm legitimately now wondering, number one, are we underselling Rui Hachimura, who's only 26 years old and has shown that he can improve upon things and is only making $17 million this year and $18 million next year? And then two, are we, again, severely underselling the value of the first round picks that we have, especially because in a lot of these deals, we are combining these two assets, the pick and a valuable player, together in order to upgrade a position. And I'm not sure whether the upgrade proposition is worth it in a lot of scenarios. And here we are with Jeremy Grant. So where do you stand on the Jeremy Grant deal?
So two things I think are worth clarifying on this. I think one is, you know, people get so sensitive when we do these kinds of hypotheticals. We're not even like talking about whether Jeremy Grant is better than Rui, you know, necessarily as a one-on-one comparison. It's like people forget that it's like, you know, you get all these sarcastic replies like, yeah, Jeremy Grant's better than Rui. And it's like, yeah, is he better? Is he two first round picks better than Rui? Is he one unprotected first round pick? That's the analysis that we're sort of getting at here. That's number one. And I think number two is, you know, people's spidey senses should sort of be going off when all these leaks are coming out about how, like, you know, Portland is insistent on two first round picks for Jeremy Grant. The implication being that they've got all these like one first round pick offers for him. How do we know that that's true, right? Like, Jeremy Grant has $120 million left on his contract and he's on a tank team. I think Portland is like, you know, when they're publicly setting the market at two first round picks, I think they're hoping for one. You know, we've seen other teams do this over the years. And so I don't even know that they have one first round pick on the table for Jeremy Grant. Now, you know, getting into like a little bit more of the analysis that you got into, I think you're absolutely right. I think Jeremy Grant, we all like sort of remember and envision his role as being what it was when he was with Denver. And when he was with Denver, he was like really more of a tweener four, but sizing up to play the four next to Jokic. You know, in your mind, you sort of imagine it as like, well, you know, they used to have Jeremy Grant, they lost Grant, then they got Aaron Gordon. And so your mind sort of just like equates those two. Jeremy Grant has not been playing that kind of role for most of the last 5 years, right? Since he left Denver. He's been a perimeter scorer. He plays off the dribble with the ball in his hands on offense. And on defense, he's, you know, been in and out of consistency with how he's sort of impacted the game on that end. And you could make an argument that like, okay, this guy's still 6'7 with a 7'3 wingspan and he's athletic. So if he locks in and he's put in the right role, he'll still be better than Rui defensively. I can maybe buy that argument. But, you know, another factor on Grant that's sort of being lost in all of this is, what is he willing to do? This guy signed a $120 million extension. By all accounts, he wants to be the guy. And I think, you know, part of the calculus here is Rui, we know, is okay and has had success being the fifth guy. Does Jeremy Grant just slot in as the fifth guy after being like, you know, 100% of the offense for a year and a half in Detroit, or 2 years? I can't remember how long he was there in Detroit, where he was just basically like, you know, doing his like Trevor Ariza with the Rockets. Like, I'm going from a good team to a bad team so I could just like chuck the ball and get my numbers up. Like he did that with the Pistons. He's mostly done that with the Blazers. And we're just going to take him from that, and he's just going to come in and be like, yeah, actually, I'm a team player now. I'm willing to be the fifth. It just, you know, there are like a lot of leaps that you have to take here. And so part of me is like, you know, I don't even know if we've offered any first round picks for him, notwithstanding, you know, some of the reports that have come out. Because, you know, we're taking this $120 million guy who plays essentially the same position as LeBron James. And, you know, I don't know. I see how you started where you started. I think I was sort of probably in the similar boat, but I definitely see how you got where you got, because it's like, the more you look into this, the more it's like, okay, it is an upgrade to have Jeremy Grant on your team over Rui Hachimura. Nobody would debate that, but we're talking about like marginal upgrades that are really hard to, I mean, really, really hard to quantify when you factor in role. And I feel like that's the thing that folks are leaving out, right? It's like, if LeBron James retired today, we should trade Rui and a first round pick for Jeremy Grant, because we need that kind of player on our team now. I don't know that we, you know, it's certainly not worth trading two firsts and Rui for Jeremy Grant in any scenario. But, you know, even trading one, I don't know, you know, given his contract and, you know, sort of what role he would have on our team.
If LeBron left today, I would absolutely even more not trade a first and Rui Hachimura for Jeremy Grant. I would be like, just keep Rui. What are we doing?
I'm just talking about team fit. But
sure,
yeah.
Sure. Because, look, I'll say this. So this may be insane to say, but if you look at Jeremy Grant's contract and you factor in his age right now, like, the fall off for these forwards who age, it can happen almost in an instant. And he may give us one good year next year. And then the second year, Tommy, he's Harrison Barnes dropped off. You know, it happens that quickly for these, you know, rangy forwards who are somewhat athletic. And if we're stuck with three more years of Jeremy Grant at $32 to $36 million, all of a sudden, that's a Russell Westbrook situation again, right? So for me, they should give us 2 seconds. You know, I know that sounds insane to say, but like, I feel like the framing that Cronin and the Blazers have done here, I don't know how they got to this place, but it's infected the minds of some Lakers fans. Right now, it seems like most of Lakers Nation is on board with, no way in hell should we be trading two firsts. Some still want to trade one first for him. I'm not sure I want to do this deal at all anymore, because let's just look at Jeremy Grant as an asset. Even if the salary cap rises and he's not that much of a detriment to our books, if we need to, let's say, use Jeremy Grant as salary ballast for another fringe all-star player making $36 to $42 million, we're not going to be able to make that trade till his last year when he's expiring, Tommy. That's 27-28, because who's going to take on 2 years, $65 to $70 million of Jeremy Grant? We're going to then have to use another first round pick on top of him to not only get the upgraded player we want, but to get off of that contract, unless we get to the point where he's an expiring $36 million. And that doesn't happen until 27-28. This is right. Just a bad asset in general. Like, it helps us in the short term a little bit, but it's bad. I'm not trading a first for him. I'm not even sure if I'm trading Rui for him. Grant last year averaged 21 points doing whatever the hell he wanted on 45% from the field. Rui Hachimura averaged 16.5 points in the last 21 games of the season as a starter, as the fifth option on high efficiency, 57% from the field, 44% from three. What do people think Jeremy Grant is going to average with the Lakers in that role? He's going to average the same amount of points. So then we're really just talking about how much of a difference is Jeremy Grant defensively than Rui Hachimura. Jeremy Grant for sure is a better defensive player than Rui, but if he's not playing that 3-and-D slithery wing role, then what are we doing here?
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with I agree with everything you said. And I think a big key is like, I don't know how Cronin and, you know, whoever have got us to this point. That was the intent, right? Like the intent of all of their crazy posturing, you know, the leaks are very obviously coming from Portland's side. Oh, we want to keep Grant. If we don't, they have no reason to keep Grant on a tanking team. Oh, if we get rid of him, it has to be for two firsts. I suspect they don't even have one first, right? On like an offer for one first on the table. We've seen it countless times. Oh, for Alex Caruso, we won't. And you know, you can maybe blame the Bulls' competence, but Alex Caruso just happened, right? Like, oh, there's no way we would let go of him for less than two firsts. And then he gets traded for Josh Giddey, which you can equate to maybe one first. I don't know. I am higher on Josh Giddey than I think some others are. But my point is, like, we've seen this over and over and over. And the only reason everyone has it in their mind that one first is fair for Jeremy Grant is because everyone thinks that two firsts is, you know, two firsts is like what they want for Jeremy Grant. So that must be fair. It's like these Lakers fans go to the used car dealership. They must have a really hard time at the used car dealership because, you know, it's like your first, the first offers that are being leaked here are just so far out of left field. You know, it's like, I don't know. I just think like everything you've said is kind of summarizes like the key issues with Grant. And yeah, it really comes down to folks not considering at all how horrific his contract is and how in the history of the NBA, can you think of a team, right, in the history of the NBA that was like a tanking team that had a guy who was committed for $120 million? And this guy is like I can't even say he's a fringe all-star, right? He's like a solid starter. And teams are giving up multiple first round picks to a tanking team to get that kind of player. I personally cannot think of it. No. They're marketing Jeremy Grant like he's an all-star, you know, like he's an all-star, you know, maybe fringe all-star who's on this tanking team. He's in a bad situation. So, you know, they don't want to get rid of him, but he wants out. So they're trying to, that's how they're sort of marketing this. That is not the situation. They should be desperate as hell to get off of this contract because they're paying him and Anfernee Simons, you know, over 60% of their salary cap to two guys to be a tanking team. So yeah, like I think that's probably why Jeremy Grant has not been traded. And like you've made this point with other trade targets, but like if Jeremy Grant's not a bad player, right? Notwithstanding everything we've just said, but he's not a bad player. If he was actually available for one first round pick, you would think some team could come up with like an expiring contract and one first round pick, and he could be like an upgrade at $35 million for some teams. He's still floating around. So like, I just think nobody wants this guy and they're trying to drum up, you know, a market out of nothing. And clearly it's not working or else he would have been traded already.
Also, can I add, I forgot to articulate this earlier, but from the Blazers' standpoint, they should just be wanting Rui Hachimura as an asset. And because, look, okay, let's take off the table just what these two can bring on the basketball court, okay? Let's say we want to flip Rui Hachimura, and this season doesn't work out. He hasn't shown enough improvement defensively. Let's say we're now in 25-26 season next year, right? Who's a more tradable asset, Tommy? An expiring $18 million Rui Hachimura or Jeremy Grant with 3 years left and like $90 to $100 million left?
This is what I'm saying. Exactly my point. And I think we made this point. I think we made this point, by the way, when this first came up. Like when Jeremy Grant, the notion of him as a trade target first came up, I think we made this point before the leaks came out about like, oh, they want two firsts, right? Which are made up leaks. Or, you know, Portland leaks. But you know, we had that same thought basically, which was, you know, we are cutting like $90 million in guaranteed money off of Portland's books in every other situation in NBA history that I can think of. Unless, you know, unless we were receiving an all-star, we should be the ones getting picks for this. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why it's like, I suspect that like, if anything, our offer was like, you know, we'll give you an expiring contract
or something.
We'll maybe give you some seconds, but like we're giving you this huge benefit by taking this $100 million 4-year commitment off your books. And I just, that's why I think, like, if anything, we probably came in and lowballed, and Portland's like, oh, two firsts, so that they're hoping that they settle on one first, right? But you would only say two firsts if you, you know, you would only say that if you had no firsts on the table and you wanted to settle at one, right? Otherwise, yeah. You would say, I want three firsts for him if you had one, right? So it's like, it just feels like they're not going to get anything. They objectively should not get anything for this guy. I mean, again, like somebody in the, I don't know if anyone listens to us anymore. If you do, send Jonathan a DM and give us your hypothetical, or give us your history lesson here of like, well, who were some other like solid starters with this kind of contract the teams were able to extract multiple first round picks for, or even one first round pick for. It's like, the situations I'm thinking of, and the problem is it's too extreme the other way, but like, we had to give up first to like dump Timofey Mozgov, obviously, we had to give up first, like, in those situations, we were a tanking team. We had to like give up first to like dump those big contracts for veterans. And that's obviously a little bit extreme the other side, but I just like it. This is a contract dump. It's not like we're getting rid of this like all-star level talent. It's effectively a contract dump for them.
And you know what this scenario reminds me of? This kind of saga that we're going through with sort of, brushing past Rui Hachimura's contributions because of one series. And he has clear defensive mental awareness issues, for sure. Don't get me wrong. But this kind of reminds me of like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, when Lakers fans were ready to ship out Kyle Kuzma for Davis Bertans and Marcus Morris.
Right.
It's the same thing, except now tack on 4 more years to Davis Bertans and $30 million each year. Like it just doesn't make any sense. The value proposition doesn't make any sense. And to even take it back to last season, like this kind of reminds me of what we were trying to do with D'Angelo Russell for DeJounte Murray, right? It's like, let's do D'Angelo Russell and the 2029 first for DeJounte Murray. Now, that deal even made way more sense than this one because DeJounte was only making $23 million a year, right? But even then, I don't think I would make that deal today because we just went through the litany of how valuable these picks are. Why are we trading a similar sort of player in D'Angelo Russell who's stylistically different than DeJounte, but they have the same sort of offensive aggregate output, right? Why are we then tacking on our best first, one of our best firsts in the LeBron AD era, on top of D'Angelo Russell to trade for DeJounte Murray? If we're not going to do that for DeJounte Murray, why the hell are we going to do that with Jeremy Grant and include a valuable Rui Hachimura, right? At this point, I know that we're speaking to the choir, but I'm just tacking on points upon points to just make sure that it's clear this is a bad deal for us. We shouldn't do it. Any last thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. It's a bad deal. We got ourselves really riled up over this. But I mean, I kind of like part of my frustration, which I'm sure you share, right, is like here we are in August. And we called this, by the way, like 2 months ago. But here we are in August. We haven't done a deal. It doesn't seem like any of the big deal, like Lauri Markkanen. I don't know if that's going to happen. Seems like probably not based on recent reports to the Warriors. And so like for the longest time, it was like, oh, everyone's waiting for the fallout. I don't think that is going to happen. I think teams are sort of settled with where they are right now in terms of their rosters. It just like should be clear to anyone who's followed basketball that 4 years, $120 million is not an insignificant amount of money for a player like Jeremy Grant. And you can say like he's better than Rui. You can say he's even twice salary wise better than Rui. You can make all those arguments, but there's never been a team that I can think of. And this is the last time I'll say it. Never been a team that I can think of who is tanking, who had this kind of player, solid starter, not fringe all-star, just solid starter, who was like getting assets for this many years, for this many guaranteed dollars to effectively like salary dump this guy. Because, it's like Portland has to spend money, but Portland also has to spend playing time on some of their young players. And having a guy you're paying $35 million to like sit on the bench because you need to find time for your younger player, that's like a problem for Portland too. And they know that. And so like, let's not just get caught up in the, we need to make a move just to make a move. And let's remember that like other teams have motivations too. Portland's not running a charity service trying to give us Jeremy Grant. They know they have to get rid of Jeremy Grant, and they just are trying to get the most they can for him. And maybe they'll end up doing what the Bulls did and like holding on for too long and not getting anything. But I suspect the fact that they haven't traded him still means that they don't even have one first round pick offer for him, because I'm pretty sure if they had one first round pick, they would just dump that guy for nothing. I mean, he's not going to become more valuable as he gets deeper into this contract, right? So it's like, if they could get one for him right now, I'm pretty sure they would do it.
They need to do it right now to make the most out of this next year when he's still an effective NBA player. And you can even point back, a similar situation to this is when the Hornets had Gordon Hayward on, like, you know, 2 years ago, he was still on for $30 million. Were they able to get anything out of him? No, they had to wait till his expiring year this past season in order to get, who did OKC trade for Hayward? They had to trade Trey Mann, Vasily Micic, and Davis Bertans, and they gave the Hornets like second rounders for Gordon Hayward's expiring $30 million. Again, Jeremy Grant does not expire till LeBron James has retired. Just put that into your head.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, that's it for this episode. I don't know why we got so riled up about a guy who's probably not going to be on this team, or at least we hope to God not. He isn't. Or we hope to God he isn't. But there it is, the Jeremy Grant talk, the Jeremy Grant debate. In future episodes, maybe we'll get into who we actually think is worth one of these 2029 firsts and Rui Hachimura or D'Angelo Russell. But for now, this is the hot topic in Lakers Nation. We covered it. We're done. No more Jeremy Grant talk from here on out, hopefully. And with that said, Tommy, I will catch you next time.
Peace.
See ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.